Now we're holding on page Tes Vov in Eruvin's second line, middle of Os Chofet. We're in the middle of talking about the importance of learning Torah and being devoted to learning Torah, and even a person not worrying about his physical comfort and the quality of the food that he eats and so on and so forth. So further in this connection, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'Abba Amar Rav Yechanan, Mai Dichtiv Noitza Te'eno Yechal Pirya. The pasuk says, the one who guards the fig tree will eat its fruit. So we understand that that refers to Torah. In last week's parasha, actually, when Moshe asks Hashem, Yifkad Hashem, Isha La'edah, appoint a successor for me, and he wants that it should be one of his own children. So the Medrash says that Hashem told him that, no, Yeshua has been serving you very devotedly all these years. He's been arranging the benches in shul and then sweeping up afterwards and so on and so forth. So he's the Noitzer Te'ena. He's the one who's been guarding the fig tree, and he deserves to eat the fruit of it. So Loma Nibshal Udivre Torah Kateena. So why are words of Torah specifically compared to a fig tree? So Loy Malach comes to tell you, Ma Te'ena Zu calls Mancha Odom Mash Mishba Motzeba Te'enim. A fig tree, whenever a person checks or touches the fig tree, he'll find figs in it, because figs, unlike most fruits, don't ripen all at once. Figs, different ones on the tree, ripens at different times. In fact, you have that has implications in Halacha. For that reason, figs are not chayiv and peya, because you have the concept, the Gemara explains that the concept of, actually, the Mishnah, whatever, explains that the concept of peya applies only to, among other things, it has to be a type of produce, but lekitos and ka'achas, it's all gathered at the same time, more or less at the same time, as opposed to figs, which are not. Marsha points out, in particular, therefore, since we're mentioning the guarding the fig tree, so the point is, so you don't really need to guard the fig, you don't need to guard other kinds of trees very much. People are not likely to pick the fruit when it's unripe, they can't eat it anyhow, and once it's ripe, you're going to harvest it, and that's that. As opposed to a fig tree, because there's fruit on it becoming ripe all the time, therefore you have to have people watching it a lot longer, so therefore that's a metaphor for a person who's learning Torah and has to watch it and guard it all the time. So after the Torah, calls Mansha Odom Hoiga Behen, the same way words of Torah, anytime a person delves into them, Moitz Behen Tam, he'll always find some kind of new Tam, some kind of new insight or whatever in it. And Omer Shmuel Ben Achmeni, Omer of Yonason, Mai Dichtiv Ahel Ayela Sahovim Beyala Schein. Now you have a pasuk in Mishlei that compares the Torah to Ayela Sahovim, a graceful deer, the Yala Schein. So the simple meaning in the pasuk of Yala Schein is Mother Yalas, the female of Yoel, so it means like a mountain goat, a graceful mountain goat. But here the Gemara is going to be Daushin in Yalas, Meloshin Mala, that it brings about, Chein. So why is the Torah something? Man Nimshul Torah, Dibre Torah Ka Ayala. Why are words of Torah compared to an Ayala, to a deer, a female deer? Loi Malach, it tells you, Ma Ayala Zu Rach Matzar, a deer. A female deer has a very narrow opening to the womb. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra that when Eeyore was wondering how Hashem runs the world, so Hashem gives him that as an example. This creature would be unable to give birth because the birth canal there is so narrow, except that Hashem sends a snake at exactly the right moment to bite it so it gets open, and therefore the baby can be born. Anyway, the point is, so therefore it's the opening to its womb is very narrow. So every time its mate mates with it, it has as much pleasure as the first time because it's very tight. So after Dibre Torah, Chaviva Nalamdan, Kol Shah Vashak, Shah Rishona, the same way, learning Torah is precious to a person every time he learns it, as if it's the first time. Meaning, in other words, Marsha says that, like this, usually you do something over and over. After a while, you get tired, you get bored of it, you get sick of it. Divrei Torah are not like that. And the next part of the pasuk, the yala schein, means shemala schein alem deha, means that it brings grace onto the person. So even though, for example, we learned last time that people are not, that Talmid Chachamim are not necessarily so careful about their food and about their clothing, it may be dirty or whatever, and they don't really pay attention because they're fartift in learning Torah. Nevertheless, they still have a chain in people's eyes. Marsha actually refers to an intern. There's a Gemara in Ksubas that tells that when a couple of the Chachamim were given smicha, also in Sanhedrin, it mentions Reb Zera, it mentions a couple of the other Chachamim. When they were given smicha, the Chachamim sang a song in their honor, like what you sing to a Kala. The Gemara describes them in Ksubas. You have the famous Gemara there, Ketzer Meraktin Lifnei Kala. what kind of things do you say to praise the Kala? So the Gemara mentions over there a song that they would sing that even without makeup, she's very beautiful. So now the Gemara mentions that when a couple of the Chachamim got smicha, they sang them the same kind of song. Talking about Chachamim don't wear makeup, of course, but the point is, even though they may not look very physically attractive on the outside, but they're yala schein, they're like we're saying over here, they have a tremendous a gracefulness because of the Torah. So therefore, so it disconnects with that. The pasuk from Mishlei continues after it says Ayala Sahov Miyala Schein. So the whole pasuk goes like this: Ayala Sahov Miyala Schein. The pasuk continues Dadeho Yiravucha B'chol Eis. Her breasts will satisfy you at all times. Ba'avosa Tishge Tomid. In her love, the love of the Torah, you'll Tishge constantly. Now, what does Tishge mean? So the Gemara over here is going to give an explanation what it means. But Rashi on the pasuk brings an interesting idea. He says that in Arabic, the word the shoda shoga means to do business. So it means you're going to love the Torah so much, it's going to be your constant business, your constant occupation. But the Gemara here is going to give it a different twist. Anyway, why is the Torah being compared to a breast? Because ma dad zekot zman shetinik mashvish b'motz v'cholov, anytime the child feels for the breast, he finds milk in it. Kach after divrei Torah, cause man shadam hogi b'han motz v'an tam. The same way, every time a person learns Torah, he finds something new in it. In fact, the Ramaphosha will point out, in fact, you find that we know when a woman is nursing, the fact that she's nursing itself causes her to have a greater milk supply. So the same way it is with Torah, the more a person learns and the more a person teaches, the more it stimulates him to come up with new ideas and new insights in Torah. And for that matter, also, you know, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that a baby can taste all the tastes in his mother's milk, the same way as the Jewish people tasted in the month. So therefore, also, you have the idea, it's never boring. There's always something new and exciting in it. The pasuk continues, ba'avosa tishge tamid. So the Gemara is going to understand the word tishge as meloshin shogeg, like a person is going to be careless. So kagon Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. So for example, we can take as an example where Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas did. This is the amora of Rabbi Elazar throughout Shas. So whenever he's mentioned, whenever you just have an amora of Rabbi Elazar without a father's name, it's him. Anyway, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, or not we did Tanya, he was after the time of Braisas, but whatever. Anyway, Omru Olaval Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, show you Yoshev Beshuka Tachten Shal Tzipori, he was sitting and learning Torah in the lower marketplace of Tzipori, but Osik Batorda, and he was sitting there learning and fatifing Zechon Torah, Usdino Mutu Beshuka Elion Shal Tzipori. Meanwhile, his coat was someplace in the upper market of Tzipori, so he'd been there, he had left his coat there, and he hadn't even realized because he's so fatifed in Torah. Tanya, Omer of Yitzchak ben Elazar, Pamachas ba'odim echad litloy. One time, somebody came to took it. Oh, an available coat. I might as well. Umotza nochash sorof olav, and he found the nochash sorof, a fiery snake, on it, protecting it, that nobody should take it. So now, Maushal says, actually, on the face of it, it doesn't mean necessarily that the person should be shogeg b'pesi, that he should be like a fool because of with his regular affairs because of Torah. So it can't mean tishge tamid, like he should be like a shogeg, like a fool. Rather, what it means is that he's going to add that the person is so fartift in Torah, he's going to act in a way as though he left it there purposely, as though he's taking care of it, and as though he davka did it that way. And so we have the example of Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. He had taka forgotten his coat over there, but Hashem arranged it that a snake was protecting it. So therefore, it's almost as if he had put it there deliberately with a snake to guard it. So therefore, that's what Hashem did for him. On the other hand, the Rambam seems to say more that it is talking about more like literally being foolish. The Rambam describes like you have a person who's in love, and like he can't think of anything else. He goes to sleep, he wakes up, he eats, everything he does, he's consumed with thoughts of his beloved. So it should be with a person in Torah. Tonet ve'Rab Onan, with they learned to know and Braisa and Yeshiva of Rab Onan, Maidichtiv, a posuk in Shoftim, this is in the Shira of Dvorah, which we lay in as the Aftorah of Parshas B'Shalach. There's a posuk that says, the whole posuk goes like this, Ruich ve'asonis tzchoros, those who ride on white donkeys, Yoshve al Midin, those who sit on Midin, which the Gemara over here is going to darish in the Loshon Din, and the people who walk on the road, sihu, talk about it. So in context, Devorah is talking about now that we have this tremendous nest that the Eibishter made and defeated Sisera, then everybody, whether you're talking about the rich people who ride around on white donkeys, which in those days was the equivalent of like riding around on a Rolls Royce or something, or the people who sit on midin, who sit, whether it means the dayanim or whether it means some of the mafoshim explain, it means people who sit on fancy carpets or whatever, or just the people who walk on the road, sihu, all of you talk about the tremendous nest that the Eibishter did. But here the Gemara is giving it a different twist. Marsha points out, because the previous pasuk says, the Devarah says, libi l'choikeke Yisrael, my heart is given over to the lawgivers of the Jewish people, meaning the Talmid HaChachamim who volunteer, misnadvim ba'am, they volunteer to go around from one city to another teaching people Torah. Even, she's saying, even in the dangerous times, she describes in the Pesukim before that, people were afraid to travel on the roads because the Knanim and Sisera's army and whatnot were there harassing them. But nevertheless, the Talmid HaChachamim was still taking the risk and going around. So she's complimenting them and saying, Libi b'chokeke Yisrael. So therefore, the Gemara wants to explain that this next pasuk, Roich ve'asonis tzchor, is also continuing to talk about the Talmid HaChachamim. So, Roich Be'asonis Tzchoris, Eilu Talmid HaChachamim, Shehochen Me'ir, Me'ir Le'ir, Me'medina Le'medina. This refers to the HaChachamim who travel from one city to another and from one country to another, Lumad Torah, in order to teach Torah, Omevad, to learn and to teach Torah, Omevarim Oysakat Zoharayim, and they make it as clear as the noonday sun. So tzchoras, meloshin tzohar, as in a bright, shining light, like tzohar tasavateva. Yoshvei on midin, the ones who are sitting on midin, that she's saying means, and Marsha explains, the point is, precisely because they're traveling from one place to another, therefore they're able to explain the Torah so much better. We talked about the other day, we quoted a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says when it comes to Svara, if a person learns from only one Rebbe, he's never going to be successful because you have to learn from different Rebbeim to learn their different styles of Svara. So these Talmid HaChachamim, Taka, took that to heart, and they were traveling around from one town to another. And by that, they became Katsaroyim, the Torah became Taka as clear for them as the midday sun. Yoshvei on midin, she continues, those who sit on midin means she yoshvei redonin din emeslamito, they sit and they judge a truthful judgment truthfully. Meaning yoshvei, meaning that they're the heaven was sunin badin, like it says in Kirkiyavis, this coming Shabbos, that they don't rush into judgment, they sit on it and they deliberate on it carefully until they find that emeslamito. Tosfos elsewhere points out the expression emes lamitoi is because you can have, imagine for example, a case comes in front of Beis Din, an edim are coming and saying such and such. What happens, for example, the dayan might have a sixth sense and realize that something is not quite on the up and up of it. If he's judging lamitoi, but not emes lamitoi, he's going to say, okay, it's none of my business. The edim are saying they're edus. They checked out in course examination. I'm not going to worry any further about it. If it comes out that it's wrong, it's on their head, not on mine. A dayan who's done in Emeslam Mito is going to go that extra mile to ferret out what's actually going on over here behind the scenes. Anyway, so that's the Yoshval Midin. Then when she continues, those who walk, that refers to the people who specialize in learning Tanakh. So they're called walking because they're on the road. They're walking in Torah. They're on their way. Al derech elu bali mishnah, when she continues, those who are on the road, that refers to the bali mishnah. They're more on the road. That's the road to learning to learning Torah fully. Sichu elu bali talmud, and when she finishes off, sichu, speak about it, that refers to the people who are experts in Talmud, in the analysis of mishnayos and braisos, from which you can derive actual halacha lemaisa. She kol sichosim divrei Torah. All their speech is words of Torah, meaning even their common speech. As we know, the Gemara tells us elsewhere that even Sicha Talmid HaChachamim, Tzricha Talmud. So on them, she can say Sichu, they should be talking, just their talking alone, we're going to learn a lot from that. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. Omer of Shizbi Meshumer Belozim and Azariah, my dichtiv, Pasuk in Mishlei says, Lo Yachroch Remia Tzedai. The deceitful one will not roast what he caught. In other words, in Pashat Pshat, Shlomo is saying a deceitful person, a tricky person, let's say he's a hunter, he may be able to hunt and trap birds that belong to other people or whatever, he won't end up being able to roast them and enjoy them. But the Gemara is giving, again, a different twist on it. First of all, the word lo yachrich, we're dashing, as short for lo yichye v'lo yarich yom. So he won't live and he won't have long days, Sayad Haramai, the deceitful catcher, the deceitful hunter. Meaning Rashi says this is a person who learns a lot of Torah, but he doesn't review it. So therefore he's like a hunter who doesn't make sure to retain his catch. So like he boasts about, the one that got away kind of, you know, so he boasts about everything that he caught, but then he has nothing to show for it. So that refers to a Talmid Chacham then who doesn't do a good job reviewing his learning. So therefore he's like that. So he won't live and he won't have long life. He won't have long days because as he's going to learn, he's going to forget his learning. And as we learned earlier in the sugya, when a person does that, then he's mischayev benafshei. On the other hand, but if Shesha summit sayat haramai yachroich. On the other hand, if Shesha says the pasuk is saying that the deceitful, the tricky catcher will be able to roast his catch. In other words, Rav Sheshes is saying, Rashi explains, if he does that, if he learns and doesn't take care to review it, you can't call him a Ramai. He's a shoite. He's a fool for putting in all that time learning and then he's not going to have anything to show for it. What it means is, rather, a Ramai means somebody who goes about it in a tricky way that he makes sure to do a strategy to keep what he caught. So then the pasuk is saying, Yachrich, he will roast his catch. He will be able to have enough. I mean, in other words, according to him, the loy is like a rhetorical question. Loy Yachrich, should he not get to roast and enjoy his catch? Of course he should, because he's taking steps to preserve. So what does he mean by that? He also Rav Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained, Moshe Letzayed Shatzad Sipodim. It's like a hunter who's trapping birds. Im rishin mishabas knafav. If each time he catches a bird, he breaks its wings, so that can't fly away. Miskayim biyader mishnamer. Then he'll be able to keep what he caught because they won't fly away. Vim lav in miskayim biyader mishnamer. And if not, then he won't be able to keep it. So the same way we're talking about a person who every time he learns a little bit, and then he makes sure to review it. So now the pasuk is saying such a person will roast his catch. He will be able to enjoy the fruits of what he accomplished. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rava, Amar Pschoira, Amar Ravona. My dichtir, what does it mean? A pasuk, Hoin mehevel, another pasuk initially, Hoin mehevel yimot, a fortune will become less by hevel, by nothingness. The kovetz al yod yube, and the one who gathers handful by handful will increase. So again, posh pshat is something like you can have a person who has a fortune and then he wastes it on trivialities. And then on the other hand, you have a person who's careful and thrifty and gathers a little bit here and a little bit there, and eventually he has a lot. But the Gemara Darshins, the word hevel were related to the word chevel, as in the word chavila, as in a bundle. So im mesim odimus terose chavilas, if a person makes his Torah like bundles, meaning in other words that he learns a lot together and he doesn't take care to review it, misma etes, then it'll get reduced because then he's not going to remember it. He'll forget it little by little. The imkovitz al yad al yad, but if he gathers a little bit of time and makes sure to review it, yarbe, then he will increase the amount of knowledge of Torah that he has. Because in other words, even he's not capable of absorbing a lot of material at a time, but he does only a little, but he makes sure to review it, and that way he retains it. There's a medrash that says something about Rabbi Akiva, that when he was learning Torah in his early years, when he was learning Torah by Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, he would everything they're saying, he'd pay close attention to and file away in his mind. And afterwards, he'd go in his mind and sort it out into various categories. And that way he was able to remember it. So here we're saying something similar. Omar Rabba, Gmiri lo rabbanon lahom milsa v'avri aloh. So Rava says you should know, the Chachamim of all yeshivas, they know this concept. They know what Rav Sheshes is. They know what Rava, what I said in the name of Rav Schoira. But Avri Allah, but nevertheless, they're over on it, and they still learn a lot of Torah at once, as opposed to learning it in small bits and making sure to review it. Now, why do they do that? Eitz Yosef brings from Nesivas Olam, which is the Sefer from the Maharal, that the reason is they love the Torah so much, so they couldn't bear to just learn a little bit at a time. They had to like grab everything they could all at once. So Rabbi is saying, nevertheless, as much as they're doing it out of love of Torah, nevertheless, it's not really the right way to go about it. They're not going to retain as much of it. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, I acted in the way that Rava is saying, that to learn a little bit at a time and then review what I learned until I know it firmly and then go learn the next thing. The Iskayim being sure enough, the Torah was preserved by me. And in the next generation, Reb Nachman Yitzchok became one of the great Rosh Yeshiva. He himself says on himself, he says on himself, by the way, in a Gemara in Pesachim, and I think maybe someplace else too, he says on himself that I'm Gemarner Sadarna. He says, I've learned a lot and I've arranged it in a rational way that I can that I'm able now to derive halachas from the order of the way that I have things in my head. And be able to understand and be able to derive new concepts and halacha from that. So that's what that fits with what he's saying over here, that he made sure to learn it piecemeal and review it carefully so he has it down pat. Okay, Yechezkel, we're up to Pasuk Vav in Yechezkel, Perek Mem Pasuk Vav. So Pasuk Hey, we said that we said he measured the wall. He measured the wall according to Rashi and most of the Meforshim. It refers to the wall of the Harabayas, according to a couple of the Meforshim. It refers to the wall of the Ezras Noshim. Anyway, he measured that it was 6 amos thick and 6 amos tall. And according to Rashi, primarily we're talking about the eastern wall was low like that, so that again, when the Kohen is standing on Harazesim and doing the Paraduma, he'll be able to see the front of the Hayim. For the same reason, it was low in the first and the second Batei Mikdash as well. So now, Pasuk Vav, Vayovei El Shaar Ashapon of Derech HaKadima. He came now to the gate that faces towards the east. So since we're going to find in these Pesukim, Yechezkel gives an enormous amount of detail to describing the gates and all of the outbuildings around them and everything. You don't really find that. By the first space of Mikdash, really, you find almost no description of the Chotzer, of the Azorah at all. You find mainly the focus by the first space of Mikdash in Melachim and in Divrei Hayamim, the focus is mainly on the Heichol, on the Ulam, which is in front of the Heichol, on the Kalim that were in the Chotzer, like the Kiyur and the Yamshel Shloima and Mizbeach or whatever. There's next to nothing about the Chotzer. He doesn't even mention how many gates there were, or the size of them or anything. Here and there in the rest of Nach, you have mention of a gate here or a gate there, and then when we understand something from that. But by the second Beis Mikdash, you have a little more. In Masechta Midas, it tells us the dimensions of the Azara. It tells us how many gates there were. You have a Machlokas, whether there were 7 or 13. It tells us the size of them, a couple of other basic details, but still not with the same obsessive detail, almost like you could say, that Yechezkel is giving over here. It could be that, we find in a number of places in Sifrei Kabbalah, there's a point that Malchus is compared to a gate. Among other things, they have the shame. The shame Adnai is related to Malchus, and it's brought in various places that the millery of shame Adnai, if you spell it out in full, Aleph, Daled, Nun, Yud, then it adds up to the same gematria as Tara, which means a gate. So maybe because Vasid Lovei is going to be V'Hoysal Hashem Amlocha, V'Hashem Amelach Al Kol Aretz. Maybe because of that, he's giving so much more space to the gates and all the details about them. Anyway, so by Yovel Yoshar, since I didn't yet have my big poster, so for now I blew up the part over there that shows the eastern gate, which is what he's going to be talking about the next few psukim, and we'll work with what we can with that, with explaining how it looks. So by Yovel El Shaar Ashapon of Derech HaKadima, he came to the gate of the Ezras Nashim, which is also known throughout the description of Yehuni Chesko. He calls the Ezras Nashim Chotzer Achitzoyna. Because like I was telling you the other day, in the third Beis Hamikdash, the idea is the Ezras Noshim completely surrounds the Heichol and the Ezras Yisrael. Not like in the second Beis Hamikdash, where we have here, the Ezras Noshim is next to the Ezras Yisrael and Ezras Koyanim. In the third Beis Hamikdash, is going to surround it, in the cave of the Sefer Gavr. So throughout the description, Yechezkel calls the Ezras Noshim Chotzer HaChitzon. So now he comes into the gate, Ashapon of Derech HaKadima, which faces towards the east, by Yaal B'mal Loisav. He went up the steps of it. Now he doesn't say how many steps there were. But the fact is, there had to be steps because the topography of the Harabayas, it goes up and up until you reach the Heichel is on the highest point of it, and therefore you have to have steps here and there. In the second Beis Hamikdash, you had there were steps from the Harabayas, there were steps from the Harabayas to the Chel, and from the Chel to the Ezras Noshim, and from the Ezras Noshim to the Ezras Yisrael, and so forth. So similarly over here, so Rashi says there are 12 steps over here, the same way as there were in the second Beis Hamikdash, where there were 12 steps from the Chel to the Ezras Noshim, the Chel being part of the Harabayas. Then the same thing over here, he says also 12 steps. The Malbim in particular disagrees with it. He says further on in the Pesukim, when we talk about the northern and the southern gates, it mentions there are seven steps. He says there's no particular reason to think that on this side there were any more than that. Whatever. Anyway, the Pesuk doesn't say how many. So he went up the steps. And the Radak makes a different point as well. He says actually that what it can be is that the steps are from the city to from the ground level outside to the Harabayas. Anyway. Then he measured the threshold of the gate is one kona thick. So here you have, so on the diagram over there, so you have the actual gate itself. The actual gate itself is labeled one slash here. It's what is it labeled over here? It's labeled 1/3. It's over here. So this is the gate itself, and then you have like an entryway forward and behind it. So this gateway itself is where he's measuring the threshold. And he finds that by Yomar Safashar Kona Echad Roichab, the Safachab Kona Echad Roichab, he measures each of the thresholds, meaning each of the sides, or each of the side posts of the gate, is one kona thick. In other words, since the wall is one kona, the doorpost covers the entire thickness of the wall. We know, of course, not always a door is made like that. Sometimes you have a doorway. Sometimes you have the door frame is only in part. Here it's saying that it covers the entire thickness of the wall. Then pasuk zayin vata. Now you have the ta. A ta is a small room near a larger building. The Gemara in Baba Basra mentions that you have there's three different names for that kind of building. It's called ta. It's called seva, and it's called yatsia. So here in Yechezkel, here he's calling them toyim. Later on, when we get to the Heichel in Perek Mem Aleph, he's going to call similar kind of outbuildings. He's going to call them tzlois. In the first Beis Mikdash, such things are called yitzim. Anyway, so you have there are toyim next to each one of the gates, and you can see here in the diagram. Eventually, he's going to say in the pasuk that there are three toyim on each side. If maybe the gates are meant to represent Malchus, then maybe it is. You have six toim corresponding to the other six spheres. I don't know. Anyway, so vata. So you have these little rooms. What the rooms were used for, Yechezkel doesn't say. And again, by the previous Bate Mikdash, we don't even know if such things existed. It doesn't mention them neither by the first nor by the second Bate Mikdash that there were any such things by the gates. They might be a place for like the Kohenim or Levium who are guarding the gates. Might be a place for them to relax or to put their personal effects or who knows what. They might use it to store things, and they might use it to store equipment for the Bais Mikdash. Anyway, each ta was one kona long and one kona wide. We learned before that a kona is a measuring stick consisting of six amos. So therefore, each one of these toyim, the open space over there, is 6 by 6 amos. So in terms of Rav Avraham Chaim no amos, you're talking 9 by 9 feet about. Uvena toyim chomish amos, and he continues between one ta and the other, there's 5 amos, namely the thickness of the wall between one ta and the next. And you have each of those walls, you have in the middle over there a doorway to be able to go from one ta to the next. The thickness of those walls between one ta and the next is 5 amos. So you have, in other words, from the beginning, you've got 5 amos of wall, 6 amos of ta, another 5 amos of wall, 6 amos of ta, and so forth until the end of it. The Safa Shar Me'etzel Ulam Hashar Me'abayis, and then he continues the threshold of the gate from next to the entryway of the gate on the inside Kona Echad is also 1 kona 6 amos. Meaning, in other words, here he's talking about something else. So what he's talking about that. So here he's digressing from the Toyim a minute to talk about the structure of the gateway itself. So what we have is. So what we have is here again. Here's the gateway, which is labeled over here 1/3. Then you have beyond the gateway, in going into the Chotzer Achitzoyna, you have like a hallway over here, and you have these walls that are sticking out to form a hallway over here. And so the stuff it points out, by the way, that usually in a gateway, you would usually have the hallway would be outside the gate, where the idea is you'd have a guard sitting there. You'd have like what the Gemara describes as base shire, for example, a gatehouse. But here, since further on, when we're gonna have, when further on in the paragraph, we're gonna have that the gates of the Chotzer Apnimi of the Ezra's Anoshim, the Ezra's Yisrael and Ezra's Koyanim, those gates, the Ulam faces outward as you would expect. So here instead they make the Ulam face towards them. That way it looks nicely aesthetically pleasing that you have one Ulam facing the other. So that's why they're on the inside. So now he's saying that the thresholds. So now what he's saying is that you have these walls sticking out over there, going into the chotzer, and you have that the thickness of those walls, which therefore makes up the side posts of the gate, is also one kona thick. In other words, those walls that are sticking out over there, but here they're labeled in the diagram over here 1/6. Those walls are also one kona thick. Next, Pasuk Ches, Vayomeres Ulam Hashem Me'abayis Kona Ech. Then he measured the inner ulam of the gate, meaning again that's facing towards the Ezra, that's facing inward towards the Ezra's Nashim. He measures that the thickness of them is one kona. So in Pasuk Zayin, in other words, he was talking about the. He was talking about the thresholds of the gate, and now he's talking about the threshold. Now he's talking about the thickness of those walls that are going into the chotzer. Next, Pasuk Tes, by Yomaris Ulam Hashar Shmoina Amos. He measured that ulam that's inward from the gate going into the Ezra's Nashim is 8 amos long, meaning that those walls that are labeled over there 1/6 are sticking 8 amos beyond the wall into the Ezra's Nashim. The ale of Shtaim Amos, and then at the end of each one of them is an ale of 2 amos. Now Rashi explains that elim are also another word for, they're also a word for doorposts, but specifically they're more like roundish doorposts. So unlike mezuzah or saf or whatever, which refers to a regular squarish doorpost, elim, Rashi explains, it's related to the word ala of aloin, which are types of trees. So therefore they're round in cross section, they're round pillars like these. So therefore, you have those are 2 amos. So that way, in other words, the total distance you have of that ulam, that area labeled over there whole, is 10 amos sticking out into the Ezra's Nashim, 8 amos of wall, and another 2 amos of these elim at the end of it. Rashi, by the way, doesn't say whether he says these elim were round, but he might understand that they were actually round. In which case, if they stick out only 2 amos, it would mean they're only 2 amos wide. In that case, then maybe it wouldn't quite look like this, where they're oval. Rashi might actually learn that they're more roundish, so each one of them looks almost like a lowercase I or something. The fact they're drawn over here oval, that's how the Tzuras Habayis, the Tosfos Yomtiv, following Rashi, prepared a diagram to show what the third Beis Mikdash will look like, and Art Scroll's diagram is based on that. So he specifically draws that they're oval like that. So they're 6 amos wide and only two amos deep. This is another one of those details where the Malbim disagrees with that and says not only are they perfectly round, but also he learns actually, interestingly, that they're not, he learns they're not placed on the ends over here like that. He learns they're actually placed one here and one here to make kind of like a sort of a pesach. Anyway, continue Pasuk Yud. V'soy hashar derech hakodim. Now let's go back to the Toyim. The toyim by the gate on the east side, shloshim mipoy, there are 3 toyim on each side, mida achas l'shloshtam, each one of the three on each side is the same size, mida achas l'elam mipoy u'mipoy, and the doorposts on both sides also all have, are also all the same size. So each of them is 2 amos, like we said before. Here we're talking about again those round door posts that you have at the end of there. So he's stressing that everything on both sides of the gate is symmetrical. Then he measured the width of the actual opening of the gate is 10 amos. Rashi points out, the same way as in the second Beis Mikdash, the Mishnah tells us in Midas that most of the gates in the second Beis Mikdash were 10 amos wide and 20 tall. Here it's the same thing, they're 10 amos wide, but they're going to be much taller, as he's going to go on to say in further Pesukim. So the width of the actual gate itself is 10 amos. Urach hashar, shloishes amos, the length of the gate, though, is 13 amos. Meaning, in other words, so Rashi explains like this. This space over here is 10 amos, but this space over here, between the two things over here, of the ulam, of the hall, is 13 amos, because each of those is set back an amma and a half from the edge of the walls. So therefore, so you have an extra amma and a half on each side, so that gives you 13 amos. Now, why are we calling it urdach when we just hold the space right below it, roichav? So Rashi explains, in general, whenever you have something two-dimensional, the longer dimension is always going to be called urdach, and the shorter one is always going to be called roichav. So here, since the roichav over here is the distance from the edge of the wall until the end of the Eilim, there's only 10 amos, and the north to south dimension over here is 13. Therefore, he's calling it urdach, even though we would have thought to call it roichav, since till now we were talking about you walking into the azara, and it'd be more natural to call it roichav. But we call it urdach because it is the longer dimension. Pasuk Yud Beis, he continues, Gvul lefnei ha-tois amma echos. Then you have a border in front of the tois consisting of one amma, the amma achas gvul mipoy, and one amma on the other side. Meaning that he's saying that if you look, it may be a little hard to see at the scale, but the wall in front of the tois, the wall that separates the first tois from the open space over here, is set back a little further than this wall. You have this wall, the walls of the ulam over here that are labeled 1/6. Then you have the walls over here in front of the respective chayim. Those are set back a little more, and they're only 5 amos thick instead of 6. So what you actually have is, you have an extra 1 amos space on each side. So you have now the space over here, that's labeled here 1/9, is actually 15 amos wide, 10 for the gate itself, 1.5 they had over here set back, and then another amma set back over here. So that's called Gvul Lefnei HaTois Amma Echos. You have one extra amma of space before the Tois begin. And the Toim themselves, as you said before, are 6 ammas on each side. Because we said before, each Toh is one kona, which equals six ammas. And the Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomidas Hashar Migaga Tole Gagoi. Then he measured the gate from the roof of one ta to the roof of the other ta. Roichav esrim b'chamish amos. The width is 25 amos. Where do we get 25 amos? So Rashi explained it means from the edge of this ta until the edge of this ta is a total of 25 amos. So you have the gate itself is 10. Each of the ta is set back 2.5 amos, so that gives you 15. For the width of this space in here. The wall here is 5, the wall here is 5. So that gives you total 25. 5, 15, and 5, 15, and 5. What's the point of mentioning that? What's the point of mentioning it? So Rashi doesn't specifically say what the point is. Mitzudas David says maybe what it is like they had a special, like they had it built like with a special canopy over that, covering from the edge, covering the entire gateway, as well as the walls on each side of the gateway. So therefore he makes mention of it. And he finishes off Pesach neged Pesach, one gate opposite the other, meaning that the gates of the Toyim on one side, the doorways of the Toyim on one side, are exactly opposite the doorways of the Toyim on the other side. All the doorways are exactly in the middle of the wall that separates one Toyim from the next. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. It says about the place of the Beis Mikdash that Yaakov says about it, Man Noda Hamokam Azeh, how awesome is this place? And Targum Onkelos explains, Les Den Asar Hedyot, this is not a commonplace place. Meaning, what do we mean by a commonplace place? Asar Hedyot, the world is an Asar Hedyot, because it was created with Asara Ma'amoris, and the Asara Ma'amoris, the Zohar calls Milin De Hedyot, like mundane words relative to Elikos. But the Mokma Mikdash is not an Asar Hedyot, because by all the Asara Ma'amoris, you have Vayomer Elikim, whereas by the Beis Mikdash, you have the Gilui of Shem Avaya, as Yaakov says, Ochen Yesh Avaya B'Mokma Zeh. So it's not an Asar Hedyot, it's something far higher. Now, Halacha, continuing on Nedarim and Shavuos, which actually has to do with this week's Parasha as well. So we started talking about the fact that a father has the ability to cancel his daughter's nedarim until a certain age, and that a husband has the right to cancel his wife's nedarim. So we said you only have until tzeitzik hachavim to cancel it; otherwise, it's too late. If it takes place on Shabbos, then you shouldn't say on Shabbos like you do on weekdays. Mufalichi. Instead, you're mevatel in your mind, and you tell her who here. Take this. Let's say she made a neder not to eat a certain kind of food. So you tell her, you offer her some of that food. Here, come eat that food. You don't actually say the words mufalich because it's not covered Shabbos. And you can't. On the other hand, you can't do nothing because again, if you wait till after Shabbos, it'll be too late to be mevatel. Therefore, you have the heter to do that. If, on the other hand, the father or the husband says at some point, you have in today's fitas, that he approves of the neder, so even if he didn't say it, but he said some kind of loshen that amounts to saying that he approves of it, or if he just thinks of it, then he can't be mefer anymore. Then you have the regular atardos nedarim, but that would require a beis din. Whether a husband can be a shliach, can be made for his wife's nedarim, he doesn't talk about it here in Pitzur Shulchan Aruch, but I think in Shulchan Aruch, I think it says that he could in a pinch. But anyway, what kind of nedarim could a father or a husband be made for is only where it involves inui nefesh. For example, she makes a neder not to bathe or put on makeup or what have you. A husband also can do dvarim shebein ish l'ishtai, things that are going to interfere with the relationship between them. But that kind of thing, it can be made for only that the hafara will only last for as long as their marriage lasts. If they get divorced or he passes away, then she becomes also in it again, unless she does actual ataras nedarim. The dinim of it are a lot more complicated than that. Obviously, this is only ketipa minayam. You have an entire half of masechta nedarim and a couple of dozen simanim and shulchan aruch that talk about all the ins and outs of these things.